The book is... Now, we checked. We are sold out of the Slaying Dragons book. So, Charles, you're going to have to do a really good job of describing what's in the book to me, because my copy was needed. So it got shipped. It got sold to somebody, because I had a copy sitting on the desk, and I was going through it, but it was needed. So it's a very popular book at shop.mikechurch.com. He's been on with Kennedy Hall before, so folks, give your regular Crusade Channel welcome to Charles Frowna. Charles, did I say your name right?
No, it's actually Fronny.
Fronny. Charles Fronny, who has been on with Kennedy Hall. That's where I heard you talking about the book. Your interview with Kennedy was good enough for me, because I didn't want to get out of the car. I was going, wait, I want to hear the end of this.
That's great.
Yeah. Tell me, well, tell the folks a little bit about yourself first.
Sure. So I live in North Carolina in the Diocese of Charlotte. Great diocese. Okay. I was brought up Catholic, but kind of a nominal Catholic until I was 20, and I had a massive conversion, which makes a great story in itself. But as a result of the conversion, I wanted to become a priest, so I pursued the priesthood. It was kind of a difficult process, so eventually I discerned that that was not what God wanted me to do. So when I was about 30, I left. I was in seminary for about a year and a half, and then around 30, I left, discerning God's will, so I was very happy about it. And then I got my master's in theology, became a high school theology teacher for 10 years. I'm married and have three kids. And it was during the time when I was teaching high school theology to mainly juniors and seniors that I started doing research on slaying dragons, on this topic of spiritual warfare and what demons can do and all the stuff that goes with that. And it was so enlightening, so revolutionary for my own spiritual life, even though I had a master's degree. Like, there was so much I did not know. I was completely clueless about some of these things. But I gleaned so much information. I'm like, people need to know this. So
right.
I'm a writer by nature. I've been writing since I was like 12. So I realized I need to write a book, and I wrote it. People loved it, and then it was great to hear that you've already sold out. So you need to order some more books.
Well, we will order it today. If the reorder hasn't already been placed, it will be. I flew out of the store, and we got a whole box of them. So the title is Slaying Dragons. So demons are dragons?
Yeah. So the dragon is a literary image in scripture,
right?
And then, so for demons. So that's where I pondered about three or four different titles to the book, but when I came up with Slaying Dragons, it just stuck immediately. And it has a nice, you know, warfare image, because these fire-breathing dragons are always active against us. So
right.
If we can kill them, that's great.
So, again, I don't have the advantage of having the book here, because my copy was sold, as you heard. So,
right.
So, but I know people that have it, and I heard your interview with Kennedy. I'm just going to mention some. This is not to detract from your work at all, but Father Longenecker has a similar workout where he is describes this war that you can't see that's going on all the time in the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
And that the, as I call them, you call them dragons, I call them bogeys. That when someone has a bogey on them of what it is that they're trying to do, is that what we learn in Slaying Dragons? Is what and how the demons work on us to try to get us to sin, to fall?
Correct. So it's from the perspective of exorcists, which is one of the things that makes it so beneficial for us to hear, is so what demons are and what their techniques are, what their principles are, what motivates them, why they're doing this, what God allows them to do, the mechanisms that we have to block them, and still what God may allow them to do, because God never stops ordinary temptation. We're plagued with that every day, and we will until we die. But so there's difference between the ordinary temptation and the extraordinary manifestations. So the book kind of goes through what exorcists see,
okay,
and how they, like holy water, they use holy water in the rite of exorcism, and we're supposed to use that in our homes. It's in the churches, but we see the power of it. Exorcists can tell us the power of it. So it's not, so I would say it's very practical. It's very down to earth, like what sacraments and sacramentals do for us how they actually benefit us in protecting us from the influence of demons, both blocking them and getting rid of them if they're already in our lives.
So I have a kind of a personal story. My priest father, Damien, after a conversation, asked me if I had holy water. I said, of course, Father. I have a font right when you walk in my door. And it stays filled with holy water. The problem is that we're in the South. It's humid. It evaporates pretty quick. But he asked me, he said, do you have a, do you keep a bottle near the bed? And I told him that I didn't, but I could. And he gave me the tip. He goes, you know, a lot of people struggle. A lot of bad things can happen while you're sleeping. And he suggested, he goes, I'll give you a little prayer. Douse your bed, make the sign of the cross with the holy water before you go to bed, and you'll have some serious, graceful protection. Have you heard this?
Oh, yes. Yeah, one of the, when I put my kids to bed, I sprinkle them and their beds every night before they go to sleep.
Oh.
Because of what I've learned. I kind of sometimes forget to do it to my own bed, but I throw holy water all around the house quite often. But yeah, exorcists, they've seen the holy water. So blessed salt, blessed candles, they're all these great sacramentals. But holy water is the one that kind of binds them all, because to bless all these items, candles, crucifixes, most things are sprinkled with holy water in the process of blessing them. So holy water is like the go-to sacramental. And you can use it, like you were saying, on your bed before you go to sleep, because a lot of people are attacked at night in various ways by the demons.
Yep.
And for some people have like nightmares, for example, and it may be of a diabolical sort. Sometimes it's hard to discern and you don't want to be paranoid, but you can anoint your senses. So anoint your head with holy water, the top of your head, even your forehead, but your eyes, your ears, I guess your nose and your mouth, just everything before you go to sleep as a way to block those specific kinds of attacks that the demons are trying to do. And it works. Yeah, exorcists see it and they counsel people and they see the effects. So yeah, your priest may have read the book, I wonder.
I think he's had some experience with the bogeys, with the bad guys. Charles Frone is on our Dude Maker hotline here. The book is Slaying Dragons. Don't worry if it says out of stock in the store. Many more copies are on the way because people want to learn about this, Charles. It's interesting to me that just here of late, like I said, Father Longenecker has a book out similar to yours or covering a similar topic or subject matter. There seems to be, and the exorcists are telling us, if we ask them, the people that actually do the exorcism, and by the by, we're not actually supposed to know who the exorcist in any diocese is, are we?
There's a general sense of secrecy.
Okay.
But some exorcists come out in public because they know people need to know these things, so they have to give talks, and they're willing to, you know, face the spotlight a little bit.
So maybe you do know who the exorcist is in your diocese, and if you're not a Catholic, believe me, if a bogey gets on you and you go to Pastor Hagee or something, he's going to tell you that's above his pay grade. He's going to send you to a Catholic priest. So it's information that everyone needs to know. But what I was going to ask is, the exorcists that you know, are they telling you that what we're kind of hearing through hearsay, that there is a massive increase in vexations, infestations, obsessions, possessions, that they're seeing a massive increase or an increase in the amount of people that are reporting what sounds to an exorcist like demonic activity?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In my book, I think it's chapter 11. It's on what's going on with the occult, the rise of the occult, the decrease of faith. I have a quote from, I believe it's the director of the International Association for Exorcists or one of the head priests. But they say that we're in the midst of a pastoral emergency. And he's repeated this, I think, at least three times in the last 10 years. And the reason he said that is because we don't have enough exorcists, and three things. The exorcists, we don't have enough. The faith life in the world is just plummeting. And the interest in the occult is skyrocketing. And the statistics are, looking at the statistics, you see that it's bad. I think it's from 2018 or 14. I can't remember where. There's a survey that I pulled into my book where, I think it was 2018, there were more registered Wiccans than there were, or just the same number of Wiccans as there were Presbyterians in the United States.
Wow.
At 1.5 million. Yeah, that's the big shocker statistic that I like to remind people of. But even when I was doing the research, so this was 2018 and 19 that I was doing the research, exorcists were saying that, yes, while rare, possession, obsession, infestation, these extraordinary activities, while they're rare, they are on the increase. So, and in the last couple of years since I published the book, I've been hearing more from exorcists that it's increasing more and more. One public exorcist, Monsignor Rossetti, mm-hmm. he came out. I did an article on my website, theslayingdragonsbook.com, where I pulled from an interview that he gave just a couple months ago, that he said exorcists are overwhelmed right now. There's just a shocking number of people coming to see them who are dabbling in the occult, who have gotten into witchcraft and are now troubled in a variety of ways. So it's really the occult, the rise of the occult, Satanism, witchcraft, various forms of the occult that people are dabbling in, because it's like Satan, it's like the cat got out of the bag. Satan's out of the bag. He's public. He doesn't mind the spotlight anymore. And people who have no faith life are kind of flocking after him because he's offering things. And the more I read about people who are coming to see exorcists and Catholic counselors who work with exorcists from the occult, like the stories they have to share are just shocking. So we definitely have a pastoral emergency.
Yeah, you see, and Charles Frowney is the author of the Slaying Dragons book. Find it at shop.mikechurch.com. Charles, people love or people, I guess, enjoy being terrorized through motion pictures of possessions. And there's not very many movies that actually get it correct. William Friedkin, when he wrote The Exorcist, I don't know if you ever heard the story, maybe you covered it in your book, but Friedkin was, Friedkin did the movie. Who wrote the book, The Exorcist? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, was it Blatty?
Blatty, that's right, J. Charles Blatty. Blatty was interviewed before he died, and he was asked about the book and the fact that the movie was like 40th anniversary or whatever, and that it was still that popular. And you know what Blatty told him? You know what The Exorcist book is really about? Because it's a fictionalized account of an exorcism that was well known to Jesuits. Mm-hmm. It happened to a boy in the 1950s. You know what the book is really about, though? Divorce.
Mm.
He wrote the book as California made no-fault divorce legal. And Blatty started to see the demonic forces going, like, got them right where we want them now, working on the families, working on the, especially the men, and the men that were working in and around the entertainment industry. And Blatty could see, and Blatty saw immediately, he saw men having affairs with minors. These are married men with children, and he saw the abuse that even if they weren't having affairs with young women, they were having affairs, extramarital sexual affairs with other women. Blatty said he could that the results on the children could be seen immediately, and that's what The Exorcist book is about. And if you think about it, and if you ever read the book, it is a commentary on no-fault divorce. I bet Maggie O'Connell can find that story and put it in the chat room, because I think I want to say it was Rod Dreher that dug that up and published it. So Blatty saw the evil, the demonic evil that was working just in no-fault divorce in the 1960s, and that's why you got the book The Exorcist.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think I've heard that, but I never dove into that interview, because we divorce, like, there's an immoral storm,
right,
that has been swirling around the whole world for the last 50, 60 years, and divorce is one big part of it.
Thank you, Dr. Torres. It's in the chat room. It's called The Exorcist as a Family Allegory, Charles. You would love this story. I'll drop the link into the Skype chat so you can see it. But I think that Blatty's point was in the interview is that we may think that, oh, come on, they just changed a little law and made people more free and what have you here. There was demonic influence, and now the demons are able to take advantage of it. And this is what I think your Slaying Dragons book is about, if I recall from your interview with Kennedy. I believe you're also on with Brother Andre Marie. is
I was,
people
yeah.
love, they want to see the head spin around and the green vomit coming out and what have you, and people breaking their bones and walking backwards and upside down and whatnot. That's just sensational. There is real soul-endangering damage that is actually being done by those self-same demons. You write about this in the book, don't you?
Oh, yeah. The different ways they can attack us. Yeah, and one of the big things that with Hollywood, like I taught high school theology for 10 years, I warned the kids, I'm like, don't watch any portrayal from Hollywood about demons, because it's going to be skewed. It's going to misrepresent the reality, make you focus on something that's not real, and then the demons kind of have an open door for you.
Right.
Because you are confused now. You've been lied to, like, that if you just, for a lot of things can happen. Like, people can become afraid of demons as a result of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that plays right into their game. Like, they want us to be afraid of them, because if we're afraid of them, we won't fight back. And they can make encroachments into our life, and they can abuse us, and their temptations we will give into because we're afraid of them. We want them to not go away so we can be holy, but we want them to leave us alone because of fear. And that's what we see right now. The whole world is just blanketed, like oppressed by a demon of fear.
That's right.
And it in so many forms. And if you really look at like the moral storm that we just talked about for the last 60 years, like
right.
all of this stuff is creating fear. Divorce tears apart families, leaves children unprotected, vulnerable, and afraid. And then, like in the real story, the boy plays with a Ouija board. And you can see a lot of people going to the occult because of fear, because of broken families. They don't have a father. They don't know what a father is.
And that's a huge, huge issue. And that's why, you know, I love Kennedy's book, The Terror of Demons and Family Be Damned, because he writes about this.
Yeah, that's big, because there's one case I heard about from an exorcist who said that he went to visit a boy. I want to say the boy was maybe 14 in a juvenile detention center.
Okay.
And Satan had appeared to the boy and as a father figure and had granted the boy power, strength that he could actually wield
wow.
in this world. And when the exorcist talked to him about being liberated, the boy didn't want to be. He wanted to keep this connection with Satan. So... And I haven't heard too many stories of Satan presenting himself in that way, but that was shocking, because the demons, the devil can present power, and a lot of people, some people, not a lot, but some people get into the situation don't want to be liberated because they've been seduced and malformed, and eventually, the longer we give in to temptations and allow the demons to operate in our lives. The less we want them to leave, because they have a personality. We've kind of like merged with their personality. We've been cultivated to love evil, and we don't want to love good anymore.
Charles, you're scaring the children. Charles is scaring me. Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel. I get goosebumps. My very, very special guest is Charles Frowne, who's got this awesome book out called Slaying Dragons. He's been interviewed by Brother Andre Marie, Kennedy Hall of the Kennedy Profession here on the Crusade Channel. And now he's hit the big leagues with the morning show here. I'm just kidding.
That's right.
Now, let's go back to The Exorcist quickly. Those of you that have seen the movie, and I'm just going off from memory now. I see all the awesome links Dr. Torres is putting in the chat room at crusadechannel.com. Let me grab that that story for you, Charles, and throw it up in Skype so you can see it too.
Sure.
If you have seen the movie, what is missing? What character is missing from Reagan's house? The little girl's name is Reagan. What character is missing? Here I'm dropping a big hint here for you. There's no father that ever makes an appearance in that film. The child is the product of a broken family. The husband, in the book, the husband cheated on the wife to a younger woman, divorced her, and left the kid and the mother to fend for themselves high and dry, and it was all perfectly legal in Ronald Reagan's California. That's the story of the book. It is about fatherlessness. You know, you and I, we could probably talk about this for days, but you and I have thank the Lord, thank Our Lady, a understanding of this, Charles, that not very many people have. And I think this is the most important thing. So who replaces the father when you have this demonic vexation or infestation? Well, as you said, the Satan appeared to the boy, and then the boy gets drunk with the promises made by the liar, right? Mm-hmm. How many other people are hearing demonic voices telling them, it's okay, keep doing the porn, you're fine, you have the right to pleasure or to please yourself or what have you here? This is what's going on here. And the fact that we live in a culture that is just a frog's breath short of Sodom and Gomorrah. We're marinating in this evil here. This is not just the product of men going bad, is it?
Oh no, yeah. There's been if you look at the science, the knowledge of what demons are doing, they've been up to this for many millennia.
Right.
Like, and they know, like, when Christ came, like, this is, they had to pivot their whole plan when they were trying to figure out who he was. And once they figured it out, they realized the church had come, this kingdom had come, this war had begun. They had to pivot their plan. They're always planning, and they're really powerful. We can't forget that even though Christ blocks them, they do have power. They do have an agenda. They are working to a certain end. And it's not just human frailty that's taking over, you know, all of our law-making systems throughout the world, but it's diabolical influence over those combined with the human frailty. You mentioned, you made me remember. So when I started teaching high school theology, it was same-sex marriage, so-called, you know, that whole thing, right, did not exist yet. It was kind of like a buzz in the air. So when I had conversations with kids about that issue, about homosexuality, it was a very different conversation. And then about 2 years later, I taught for 10 years, about year two of 10, that's when the Supreme Court did their nonsense. I think that was 2014 or 15.
Obergefell was 2014.
14.
Yep.
So yeah, I was about 2 or 3 years into teaching. And then the whole conversation just changed with the kids because the law of the land had changed. Yep. And they're so malformed. But one of the things I noticed, and I told a priest, like, after that Supreme Court, you know, Obergefell, I told him that I sensed, this was before I did the research on slaying dragons, I was sensing this, I guess you could call kind of an oppressive spirit, this voice, not hearing a voice, but just this temptation saying, just move on, you know, just accept it. Like, this is the law of the land, stop making a big deal. Like, to me personally, just this temptation, and it was so weird. It was palpable. It was there, and it was trying to convince me to just not make a big deal about it and move on. You know, let people be happy, whatever it was. I had to tell a priest about it, and he said, yeah, like, that makes perfect sense because the whole world is just embracing this evil, and we have to be on guard.
Charles Frowney is the author of Slaying Dragons. Charles, I had a question in the chat room. I was going to ask it anyway, but I'm glad someone reminded me. How important is it in these situations with the bogeys abounding? How important is it for the father to pray for the family and recognize this in the house? Specifically the father.
Yeah, specifically, as you said, the father, because one of the issues that I talk about in the book that exorcists talk about a lot is hierarchy, and hierarchy is also existing in the family. So the father is, no matter what people want it to be, the father is the head of the family. He has a spiritual and a moral authority, a temporal authority, and he can do, you know, binding prayers and give blessings to the family. And he is the father. He's the image of God to the kids until they get to a certain age. Like, they are learning what God is like through their father. It's a very powerful and humbling role for a man to have.
Right.
But it's something he has the grace through the sacrament of matrimony to wield. So the father needs to lead in everything, in prayer, in blessing, in faith, in the use of sacramentals. He can, like I mentioned, exorcists say that the father can do binding prayers and bless the whole family. The mother has a certain authority too, but it's under and flows from the father.
Wow.
So the more you realize that, like, the whole debate, like, one of the things that ended in my mind was the whole debate about whether the father's the head of the family. When I heard what exorcists have to say, I'm like, this is a done deal. Like, there's no more question.
That's right.
Like, demons recognize it and respect it too.
So they may take advantage of it.
Yeah, they'll take advantage of it, and they'll run from it, depending on how it's wielded. They'll enter the home if the father's not doing his job, And if he's doing the opposite, it's like the in the book, pornography comes up because it's a common grave mortal sin.
It is.
If the father's deep in that, then the home is spiritually not just spiritually unprotected, but spiritually attackable, because he has brought demons in. Because pornography is not a small sin. It's not just a mortal sin. It has a diabolical component to it. I mean, all mortal sins do, essentially, but Satanism and the occult is attached to pornography, to what it is and how it's made. And that's one of the revelations exorcists have given that has been shocking. And
I didn't know that, but it makes sense because it's primarily it is an objectifying of the female's ability, the power that God grants her to bring new life into the world, that she can carry it around in her womb. And instead, that power and the organs necessary to carry it out in the natural world are portrayed as objects for the use and for the practice of a mortal sin. So it's easy to see then the diabolic angle in it. Charles, we're going to run out of time here, and I think we're going to have a couple more of these interviews, because this stuff here is something that, as I said, people need to read the book Slaying Dragons, okay? shop.mikechurch.com. But wrap yourself around and conform your mind to the reality of what we're talking about here. And when you say that the father must be the leader in this, if you're not attending to this duty, dads, and even if the kids are gone out of the house and you got an empty nest, if you're not attending to this duty, then you're leaving the door wide open for evil. And that evil is going to find it. You know, my friend Ralph Sarchi used to say that the demons can sense, they know, they can sense when someone has opened the portal into the home or into the family. They can sense it. Has an exorcist told you this?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's in the book. Like, they all talk about it. One said, so demons look for wounded people and vulnerable people. And it's like they smell blood and they go after it. They see something attackable and they will attack. They know when we're vulnerable. Definitely.
So this is why it is my personal little crusade here is to get as many men as I am blessed to meet or hear my voice or whatever, to get them to understand you must have a personal devotion, and you got to lead your family and having a devotion to Our Lady. You have to. And the reason I say you have to, I don't think you can combat the demons without her. I mean, it's scripturally we're told she crushes the head of the serpent. What do the exorcists say about that?
Oh, yeah. Our Lady is just super, super critical, powerful, important, non-negotiable, must be a fixture in your life. And if you have any diabolical concerns, any like spiritual desires, we have to go to Our Lady. Like, that's what God has given her to us for. And she, the saints, I quote a lot of the doctors of the church in the book. So it's rich with exorcists and doctors of the church and traditional teaching. But they all talk about how frightened the demons are of Our Lady.
Mm-hmm.
So praying the rosary every day is the advice of all the exorcists. One exorcist was talking recently about how he and his team, what they do every day to avoid being attacked by the diabolical. And one of the things he said was he goes anywhere without a rosary on him, and he prays it constantly.
Charles, I have a backup. Not only do I have one, I have a backup. In case one fails, I have a backup. Both of them have been touched through a relic of the True Cross, and now, thanks to Father Damien, to a relic of Our Lady's Veil. And many, many other sacramentals. Charles, I got to go. We got to leave it here. You got an interview to do, and I'm out of time. The book is Slaying Dragons. Charles will come back. I'll have you back in a couple of weeks, and we will continue this conversation. God bless you in the work, bro. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Look forward to coming back.
All right, Charles, thank you very much. Thank you very much.